So here we are, another Memorial Day, another Memorial Day weekend once again, often a weekend of family reunions, barbecues, 3 days off in a row from work, traffic jams on the highways, a pretaste of summer. My memories go back to going to the cemetery with my family on Memorial Day weekend to the MacNeil, my father's family's plot, and greeting my grandparents and other relatives. And for some of us, it is about solemn ceremonies at a cemetery, as my adopted hometown of recent years, Santa Paula, will have tomorrow at the cemetery, or perhaps a Memorial Day parade, as we used to have in my hometown back in Massachusetts. For ministers, it's often a time to wonder how to address this day from our pulpits, especially in our congregations, where many of us actively work for peace. And we have complicated relationships with the military-industrial complex, perhaps now more than ever. One of my colleagues sidestepped that every year that he was in the pulpit to highlight everyone who had died since last Memorial Day. And it was actually kind of fun, and composers and poets and anyone. That congregation in Massachusetts did not do a Day of the Dead. People back there didn't used to do the Dia de los Muertos. So his service kind of filled that gap for that congregation and pretty much left out the original intention and orientation of Memorial Day. As Army Chaplain Floyd Vernon Chandler has written, and I quote him, "There are many stories about the beginning of Memorial Day. The first official observance was on May 30th, 1868, when flowers were placed on the graves of Union and Confederate soldiers at Arlington National Cemetery. Since World War I, Memorial Day has been commemorated as a day to honor all men and women who have died while serving in our nation's military. In its origins, it was called, and some of you may remember this, Decoration Day. And folks went to decorate the graves of the fallen soldiers. They still do that with putting new flags up, for instance. Or my family would bring flowers, just like we do out here on Dia de los Muertos. So Chandler continues, "On Memorial Day, we remember our comrades in uniform whom we have loved and lost in service to our nation, and we express gratitude for their lives and their very real sacrifices. On Memorial Day, no matter what our feelings about war, we remember the sacrifices made. May we honor the lives of those who have died, and may we reach out in love to our living veterans and their families, extending the olive branch of acceptance and respect as our faith calls us to each and every day." For 8 years, I sat on the Ministerial Fellowship Committee of the Unitarian Universalist Association, the MFC, as many of us know it. This is the group that credentials all ministers from the United States and Canada, whether they plan to serve in the parish or as ministers of religious education or in the communities, as I did previously, as founder and director, as you heard, of an elder chorus, the Golden Tones. That's a whole other sermon or three about how much fun that was. And how I got interested in end-of-life issues. Increasingly, during my years serving on the MFC, we saw more and more candidates for Unitarian Universalist ministry whose plan was to serve in the military. Feels a little counterintuitive for some of us from the Vietnam era. And going back to my time in seminary and in the decade afterwards, I was the advisor to the UU students at Andover Newton Theological School. And during that time, I got to know very well Cynthia Kane, who was a military chaplain. Cynthia once wrote this: "My troops like it that I have a God who laughs and loves and listens and journeys with them through the daily grind of life in and out of the trenches." So I love that. My God likes to laugh and love and listen. Another seminarian I worked with, Jay Libby, served as a chaplain in the Navy, and I think he still is. I didn't get a chance to reach out with him this week. And another, George Tiger, served as chaplain in the Army with two deployments to Afghanistan, which were the inspiration for a book that he wrote, War Zone Faith. War Zone Faith. And here's a passage from that book in a chapter called The Army Mullah, which gives a glimpse into his life as a chaplain. "You sergeant or commandant?" a young Afghan lieutenant asks as he points to the cross on his chest. That's how they identified as being a chaplain. I don't think they have chalices. I try to explain what a chaplain is. In the end, he suggests Army Mullah. And I agree. Not the most accurate description, but the most meaningful for him. Chaplain has little meaning for him. Mullah, on the other hand, is something he knows and understands. Together with Army, we have a term that means something to the both of us. And as that night wears on, as he tells it, the Afghan lieutenant and I speak more with the help of an interpreter about our very different faiths. We both affirm that the ultimate character of the divine is love. We both believe that the task of religion is to help us live more whole lives. Certainly, the words we use are very different, yet as we do our best to translate our different faith languages into native tongues, we discover more in common than we thought. We do not try to change each other, only to understand each other. Tiger goes on to say, "Whatever religious tradition you call your own, you will probably find religious diversity even within it." We can all underline that one, I'm sure. "We can believe we mean the same things when we use highly charged theological terms like God or Christ or Bible or church teachings. Yet these words convey layers of meaning, not discrete definitions." It's important to remember this and do our own mental translations as we communicate with each other. I went to my seminary was had 42 different denominations within it. It wasn't a UU one. And I got very adept at translating what they were talking about in my mind. I'm not sure how well they did with the UU world, but that's okay. He goes on to say, "That's what I call being religiously multilingual." I love that concept. "Every conversation is an opportunity to move the world toward peace," Chaplain Tiger says. Moving words. And underlying for me the importance of Unitarian Universalists acting as chaplains in the military. Chaplain Tiger has seen and experienced things that we cannot fathom, like Sam said earlier. Naked children throwing rocks at him in the street. A playground in the middle of a Taliban graveyard. Imagine that. Incredible violence and anger and loneliness and fear. Military ministry these days is a way that our ministers show up to serve the greater world. In thinking about all this, I was in touch with Sarah Lambert, who I worked with when I was on the MFC. She recently retired from the UUA, but she was the denominational endorser of those heading for the military chaplaincy. She worked really hard at opening the space up and opening our minds up for the need of UU chaplains in the military. She once said in a sermon, and I quote her, "Chaplains are non-combatants who actually travel with a security guard at all times when deployed to a war zone. They are on ships, in boot camp settings, in hospitals, on air bases, in army installations, and Coast Guard camps all around the world." She says, "We Unitarian Universalists have been in the military chaplain corps since the very beginning. In fact, the very first chaplain commissioned by George Washington for the Continental Army was Unitarian minister, the Reverend William Emerson, our name of the day, grandfather of Ralph Waldo Emerson. George John Murray, the famous Universalist who landed at Barnegat Bay in New Jersey, bringing one strand of Universalism from England, was also among this very first group of 20 chaplains. I love this. "When challenged by his fellow chaplains," Lambert says, "that Murray was a heretic and not worthy of the office, George Washington himself defended him, saying, 'I have commissioned him as a chaplain, and you will respect him as such.' Thus began a very interesting and challenging experiment in religious pluralism in the chaplain corps that continues until this day. But during the Vietnam War years, Unitarian Universalists largely left the service along with their Protestant counterparts in protest to that war, which led to the unintended consequence that the chaplaincy for many years became largely dominated by more conservative and evangelical Christians. But the pendulum has swung the other way, which I think is a very good thing. It's a complex world we live in, and UU's centering love, those who felt or feel called to join the military, usually as teenagers, perhaps as a career path, to have their education paid for, to maybe learn new skills, or as a family tradition, and to defend their country. So there's all those threads in it. They can be companioned in the most difficult of situations by a UU chaplain. When they discover that what they thought they were signing up for was perhaps not what they found. I highly recommend a recent documentary that came out last year that I watched this week. It was not an easy watch. It's called What I Want You to Know. Be a good one to discuss in a social justice group or anyone. It's an intimate journey alongside post-9/11 veterans as they share deeply personal stories from their deployments, exploring truth and justice in the context of their wars. Their depictions of the moral injury provide a unique and critical perspective on the cost and the consequences of war. Viewing this film can increase awareness and understanding of our veterans' experiences and can encourage empathy and support for veterans and their families, something I believe our congregation's centering love can and should do. At my very last meeting with the MFC, which was in 2021, at the end of our interview with one of our two chaplain candidates at that meeting, One of the panel members asked the candidate why she felt called to minister in the military as a UU minister. And her reply was something like, if I can remember correctly, who is more needed to give service than someone whose faith calls them to believe in the inherent worth of every human being? And I add, whose faith calls us to center love in the midst of all those other values. How is it that they are called to make meaning even in the middle of war? But that is what they're called to do. Even as they are, the chaplains, also in harm's way, far from their spouse and children. As I was pondering these things, I thought I would like to have the perspective of someone who served in the military, someone I know really well, my nephew, Matthew. Matthew is the oldest of my sister's five sons, and they all grew up on Marine bases around the world, Okinawa, and why they, so this was normal for them, right? Matthew is a very talented artist and photographer. And in fact, he majored in art in college, but he also fell in love and realized he couldn't imagine how he was going to support a wife and a family as an artist. So growing up with a Marine as a father, the military path seemed like a good option. When his father was a Marine, we weren't engaged anywhere with a war, just he lucked out, I guess. So Matthew became an officer in the Army, and he went on to serve in the Special Forces, the Green Berets. He served two tours in Iraq and two in Afghanistan. Due to all the changes in his life and mine, I hadn't seen him much until recently. He now lives in Colorado Springs, and I stopped there on a road trip last summer. He started a coaching business, and I talked to him again yesterday, and he's decided to go back to his photography, and he's going through, what did he say, like 26,000 negatives, and he's got a lot. I said, well, that'll take you a while. So I asked Matt, and especially after he came back in 2016, it's now been 10 years, I asked him what meaning chaplains may have had for him during his deployments. And later when he was stationed in Brussels with NATO, we talked about what would make a good chaplain from his perspective. And he said it would be someone who understood the stresses that the soldiers are going through, someone who could be a sounding board, someone who could give feedback. He talked about that service men and women are from what he called a large sample of the United States, from all walks of life, from every kind of religious and non-religious background. And he talked about how difficult it was to be so far from his home and his family, and the relationship issues that often resulted from that. He agreed with me that congregations could be part of those returning to find a new purpose. He talked a lot about what is your purpose. You know, they talk in the military about your mission. Your mission is to come and change hearts and minds. Remember that from all the rhetoric back during those wars? Changing hearts and mind. So I think it's important, as someone referenced today, that May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and some of those most needing our understanding and empathy are those military amongst us. It was heartbreaking to hear some of his story, although he's doing pretty well now. And at the end of our discussion, he said, "I love you, Aunt Maddie." He'd never said that to me before because I was listening to him and caring. It's hard sometimes for us to reconcile our general UU commitment to peace with embracing any kind of military ministry. But if we think about our principles and our new centering of love, that is what our faith calls us to do. It's what we are called to do. I've been a pacifist all my life. I believe that world peace can be won, but not be won by waging more war. That is my core belief. And I've been called naive, and I certainly am privileged to live in this beautiful place with enough food to eat and work I am called to do, which gives my life purpose, gives my life meaning. And young people perhaps need to look for where they're going to do, find that. So as I end my words for this morning, we must ask, I think, how can we bring those of our people who were trained to be warriors home? How can we walk with them, companion them, as they try once more to find purpose in their life, love in their life? How can we do it? I'd love for us to be more supportive of our returning sons and daughters and nephews. My nephew, the one of five, he's the oldest of five. He has one brother who's a retired Marine, was also in Iraq and Afghanistan, and another brother who is serving right now in Germany, has been sent over to Ukraine a couple of times on things. And Matthew's two sons, one just graduated from high school and he enlisted in the Navy, and the older one is graduating from college and being commissioned into the Army. So for that family, it's a career path, you know, and it's hard to come to terms with it sometimes. All I can do is listen. So I pray to the depths of my soul, may we one day live in a greater peace in which all souls are reconciled and all people are cherished and safe. May it be so.